we've got everything you need for everyday life.
Your Minnesota Twins are a different brand of baseball.
Hit high in the air down the left field line. I think this is a no doubter. Way gone.
And this is Pop.
It's a towering drive to right, and it's onto the plaza for a home run.
So come down to Target Field and experience baseball, soda style.
Saturdays are for the Twins. Start your Saturdays at Target Field with $6 beers, $2 hot dogs, and $1 soda. With 612 Saturdays presented by Car Bliss and Bally Sports
the
North.
The Paradise Center for the Arts is a vibrant cultural and artistic gathering spot in historic downtown Faribault. The Paradise is committed to offering high-quality visual and performing art opportunities for Faribault and our region. Regular events spotlight some of the best artists and musicians in our area and throughout Minnesota and the Upper Midwest. Our beautifully restored facility includes art galleries, classrooms, clay and textile labs, a gift shop and rehearsal spaces, in addition to a 300-seat auditorium. Visit ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org for a full schedule of events or call our box office at 507-332-7372.
Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination.
Good morning, this is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany Radio for the Imagination. Thanks so much for listening to the show as we celebrate all things creating and stories. We've got a good one today, so I'm excited to have you join us for a doubleheader today. I'm going to talk first about stuff, because I have stuff on my mind, that is the stuff in my house. I have too many things, too many books, so much stuff that just keeps coming. It gets delivered, and then, of course, we have the boxes that they came in that hang out after opening. There's clothes to be donated, mail to be sorted, laundry piles, the multiplying stuff in the storage room in the garage. We all have stuff, too much stuff. And I've been thinking about this, especially since we just sold my mom's house. So congratulations, Mom! That was a big week this week to get that taken care of. And I also have to say thank you to Mom for being Art Zany Radio's number one fan. And hello, I'll slide in another quick hello. My sister's visiting. So hello, Kim. It's great to, I hope you're listening as well. But in the process of sorting out through the house, we found so many things. Photos that we need to learn more about. Who is that? Where did that come from? Boxes of slides with family memories. Collections in need of evaluation. Stuff to figure out what to do with next. Managing stuff really is a lifelong task. So what are you collecting? Take a look around your house. Are there tchotchkes, valuables, photos? What are the stories behind the pieces? And that's where I want to take this conversation. The stuff has no meaning unless we pass on the stories. How are you planning to share the stories of your stuff? That's what matters. The stories matter. And today we have two great stories about handling all of life's stuff. And I hope this inspires you to do something with your stories. Today in Art Zany Radio Studio, we have two segments, as I mentioned. First, we're going to lead off with Dan Van Tassel and his new memoir, Beyond Barren. And then we're going to preview the Northfield Community Action Center's Runway Revival Fashion Show event with Natalie Draper and Annika Reichner. I hope I got that right, Annika. I didn't get a chance to ask you before we go on the air, so I'll double check that before we bring them into the studio. But first, let's start with Beyond Barren by Dan Van Tassel. It is a book about his memoir. It combines humor and insight to record an indelibly stunning variety of lifetime experiences. It's chronicling the adventures of a pair of academics whose numerous and diverse avocations, dwellings, vehicles, and pets enhance their careers and family life. And it's described as a book that fascinates like a kaleidoscope. And so we are delighted. I'm so thrilled to have you back again, Dan, into the Art Zany Radio Studio.
Good to be here, Paula.
Yeah, we talked, I guess it was bus ball?
I think it was, yeah.
Or I can't, I lose track.
Year, I think,
yeah. Exactly, about your a book that I really did enjoy. It was that trip through all things literature, stories, adventures. I'm looking for the title here. Why am I not seeing it?
Journey by the Book.
There you go. Yep. That's it. I thought it was in that little intro I posted, but we'll double check that. Journey by the Book is, in fact, a great show and a great way to introduce people to that idea of, you know, armchair travel and also stories and adventures. And this book takes a little bit of a different turn in that it talks about all kinds of things in your personal life. And it's a continuation of your other book, which was the first book that you published, which was Back to Barron. And Barron is the town in Wisconsin that you grew up in.
Oh, 80 miles north. East.
Yeah, not too far away.
No.
And tell us a little bit about what you've been up to since you were here last and how you got to start Beyond Barron.
Picking up on all the stuff that you talked about, we've got what we call exalted memorabilia in a whole room just full of it. And as I sort through it and see all this stuff that we got, I like to think of one of my favorite writers, Thoreau, who simplified his life and actually managed to live in a little hut with only three chairs, one for solitude, two for friendship, and three for society. But anyway, this book has been kind of on the thought list for a long time. That is following up on Back to Barron with that book on travel, imaginary and real trips intervening. But I always had a list of some of the chapters, maybe not all 37 that this book encompasses. But it is amazing when you start to look more closely at anything, an insect, a flower, your life, or whatever, there's a lot that spills out. And this one seemed to kind of direct itself as the chapters flowed, kind of following a chronology from, as we left Barron in 1956, and that was almost a traumatic moment, really, for us. There were five kids in our family, and we were all deeply involved with schoolmates and so forth, and then we had somehow to let the excitement of moving to Sioux City, Iowa, eclipse our fondness of farewell, you know, to Barron. But I did go back to Barron after graduating from Central and Sioux City. Central High was a castle, and we called it the Castle on the Hill. People across the street, across town, in another school called it the Dump on the Hump. But anyway, the move then from Barron on to Beyond Barron, actually the title kind of and the cover with the Mount Rainier so forth point the way west from Barron.
Yeah, with that Journey by the Book, you had a chance to go back to, and also your first book, go back to Barron. Uh-huh. And one of the characters I want to talk about that's in the book is your father.
Oh, yeah.
And he was a pastor and a lover of nature.
Yep.
And I thought what was one thing that's remarkable is he hiked every day. And I find that very admirable to, you know, no matter the weather, he enjoyed getting outside. And some days it's harder than others. Yeah. But he really had a passion for nature and especially birds.
Yes.
And so I'd love to for you to start with the spiral-bound notebooks that you got of his. And you said that he used to describe his morning jaunts studying firsthand birds, other creatures, and plants across the spectrum. Oh. What did that mean to you to have that? And what's, you know, his connection to that town?
Yeah, that's very interesting, yeah. Well, my dad died in 2018. Just 3 months shy of 105.
Wow.
I don't know what genes these are I have on, but anyway, We tended to gather in San Diego a lot, and on a recent trip a couple of years ago, one of my sisters and her husband had a lot of memorabilia, and they were kind of, you know, doling it out. Does somebody want this or that? Well, there were two spiral notebooks there, and I glommed onto those because those were the journal for, during the 80s at least, of my dad as an observer in nature. And he was very astute about identifying birds, which ones he hadn't seen or heard before. And it was a real treat to go through those journals. And in this Beyond Barren, as you know, because you've read the book, mm-hmm. I include a few entries just to show kind of what occupied him. Of course, one thing is when if there was litter or trash, he picked that up because he would deposit it in an ash can back where he had parked, just to clear things out. But if he didn't know a flower, he would pluck one and bring it back and have his wife, my mother, identify it, and they would go on from there. But while he appreciated people coming out to ride a horse or to walk with a dog on a leash cross-country ski, he was there not for the exercise that happened, but for the contemplation, really, of the whole created universe, almost like Gerard Manley Hopkins, the poet who celebrates the God-made universe. And so it was fun to see those journals from my dad. Mm-hmm. I had gone with him a couple times in California out birding, and he outbirded me. There was no question about it.
Yeah, I always admire people who can, you know, recognize by just look, you know, or hearing the sound, or they know the coloring, or they know the difference between the male and the female, and just to have that knowledge.
Mass Stephen.
Yes, right.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff.
It's a beautiful part. I think that's a wonderful piece of the story. And so I think that you've always been in tune with observing and looking, because that probably comes from your father. And one quote we had in this book from Ralph Waldo Emerson is, "The health of the eye seems to demand a horizon. We are never tired so long as we can see far enough." And this quote comes from when you were living in Moorhead, Minnesota. It's not exactly about the horizon, because you couldn't see it. When you're talking about that land that is flat farmed and famous for those mountains of snow.
Yeah.
But I thought about, for you in this book, you kept moving westward for a while.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I wondered if, you know, just a little bit about the American landscape and what you discovered as you kept moving to all these different places that are mentioned in this book. You know, there was, I guess, Ohio isn't west. That came later, I believe.
Yeah.
So you have, you know, out in Oregon, right? No, Seattle, Washington.
Right.
Uh-huh. And California, and then Ohio. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your discoveries.
Yeah, it was kind of like a personal manifest destiny in terms of the way the railway, the Pony Express, everything kind of moved west. And
You weren't around for the Pony Express.
No, I was. I kind of wish I were, because I always loved ponies. But you kind of stirred something up here, and that is that it was a kind of a westward exploration.
Mm-hmm.
And of course our son and his wife settled in Santa Cruz. He's a surfer and likes the Monterey Bay area. Mm-hmm. We love to visit there as well. But it is fun to, and the Emerson quote is really good. That is, as you look at different horizons and so forth, what you see, you know. And while we were up in Moorhead for 2 years, I thought it'd be three, but we could only tolerate two winters. And then we took off for California. And another college there for a year before returning to University of Iowa for further graduate work. But yeah, that was interesting. I was going to add that my dad one time was at a bookstore in Chicago where Roger Torrey Peterson, the great field writer mm-hmm. on birds, was. And Dad pointed out that a particular bird, the description of it was in error about the color of the throat. And Peterson looked at the book and he looked up and he says, "You're right. I'm going to have my assistant change that for the next edition."
I bet that didn't happen often to him. Wow.
So I guess that shows that Dad was more than just a tyro or whatever. He knew his birds.
He certainly did. Wow. Yeah.
But as you move across the country, there are lots of different species, including human beings and organizations in universities, and as well as the animals that haunt the area. And it was fun to explore. And that's what you feel in that Emerson quote, that people are refreshed by renewed by looking at different aspects and not keeping your eyes closed.
That is absolutely true. Yeah. And one thing I saw in this book when you were, I believe it was when you were in out west. You had the chance to spend some time with William Stafford.
Yes.
I have enjoyed his essays and his poetry for a long time. He was a really brilliant writer.
Yes.
And I'm just curious if you could share a story or two about learning about him or spending time with him.
Well, he was a National Poet Laureate, and we had him do readings both at PLU, Pacific Lutheran University, and at Muskingum College in southeastern Ohio. Each time we had him as a house guest, so that was just terrific. Plus his son, Kim, did a doctorate in literature, and at PLU I worked with a resident poet to put together a program on publishing and printing. We bought a bunch of used Chandler and Harris printing presses, hand letter presses, and added some courses to our curriculum, like copy editing and paper making, so forth. And then we had internships in San Francisco at the Harper and Row publishers.
Wow.
So, and we hired Kim Stafford, the son of William, to run the program. But his poem, Stafford's poem, "Traveling Through the Dark," is a poem of a favorite of mine, and I always include it in any poetry courses I teach, including very recently a poetry course taught for the CVEC, the Cannon Valley Elder Collegium, which is famous in this area for drawing people to Cannon Falls and Rochester and so forth. And during that whole outbreak of
COVID?
Yeah, okay. COVID. I went, and so did others, to Zoom, and we were able then to get people from the East Coast, West Coast, so with 15 mug shots right there in front of you.
Yeah, exactly, because your story has really been about teaching as you've moved across the country, and of course your family, and one of the highlights in here is all the different homes that you've lived in.
Yes.
And I absolutely love the story about your daughter, Abby, and you called the story The Tree Swing, which has been, it sounds like... sort of infamous in your family.
Exactly, because I, like Thoreau, I wanted to do all that practical work myself.
Yeah, that's admirable.
And also because of my fondness for Frank Lloyd Wright and the fact that I imagined I would become an architect, though that did not really pan out. We did hire an architect for the house that I built there in Washington State in Puyallup. And anyway, when I was finishing off the cedar shingles on the roof, I slipped, lost my footing, went bumpity bump, slid all the way down. And in fact, only because we kept so many trees around the house did I get saved, because I landed right off the enclosed deck in a tree that was so supple, and it leaned out a few feet with me, and then it leaned back again, and right at that moment I got off the tree, and it was on the deck there. Abby and Rhoda, unbeknownst to me, were on the swing there watching this gymnastics, and Abby pipes up, "Hey, Papa, do that again." And we have repeated that phrase again and again, because children, they think their parents have more power and skill and maybe presence of mind than we do. And so she thought maybe I had worked out some kind of dynamic I could do again.
That is such a great story. It totally encapsulates yeah. what a kid's eye
yeah.
is about.
Yeah.
And just yeah. like, that looked fun, Dad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Can I have a chance?
don't yeah. do like I do.
Well, and then the kids that would play jokes on me, too. Like, there was a little plastic dinosaur that they would slip into my salad, and I ran across that a number of times. Also, they put flour on the pillow, short sheeted the bed, all kinds of things. That and one time we were all going to go out for supper, and I came home and the house was deserted, and on the kitchen counter there was a note that they'd all gone to a movie. I thought, what in the world? Well, right then, the cat was out of the bag because somebody giggled. They were down in the basement, and so we all went off to the planned event.
Yes, and folks, if you're just tuning in, this is Art Zany Radio for the Imagination. I'm here with Dan Van Tassel. We're talking about Beyond Barron. That's Barron, a memoir. And this is the story of the places you've gone and the observations you've made, a little bit of your family history. And we were just talking about the houses that you fixed up, which is kind of a central piece of the
yes.
the story, because you wanted to do that in each of the places that you encountered. And I found a quote that I did not know this quote before, and I think it's a really apt one to think about. And I'd love to get some more perspective from you mm-hmm. on carpentry and more than carpentry, because it says, "Carpentry isn't magic, but it does facilitate transformation." And so did you have that sense every time you were engaged in remodeling a house, or you built one house but then remodeled mm-hmm. several others? And what was it that made that a passionate pursuit for you?
Well, like even the house we have in Northfield now, 413 Afton Drive, we've put our fingerprints on the place.
Mm-hmm.
I love woodworking, so I expanded the members around the doorways and windows, did crown molding, put in some wainscoting, built columns to separate some areas in the house, and then, well, of course, we added more hardwood in the living room, place of carpet, but ultimately we decided to paint all of the woodwork white, and it's really quite stunning. The fireplace had kind of rough-hewn cement and brick and so forth. Well, we drywalled that and made it more of a classical edifice. And so, yeah, we've always enjoyed interior decorating and carpentry. And I think carpentry is something that came to me early on. My brother, who was only a year older than I, when we were sub-teens or whatever, built a boat. Apparently we were thought to be carpenters because my aunt in Sioux City asked us to build her a screen porch. And, of course, she thought a porch could do anything. She'd give us an old clock, and we were expected to fix it.
Well, but, what is that? You can see the transformation in the house, that becomes obvious.
Yes.
But what about for you, inside of you? What does it give you to do that work?
Well, I think it kind of parallels writing, the sense you feel when you give birth away to a stream of words that even read aloud are exciting because of the sounds and the choice of words and so on. But carpentry, it's very satisfying. Of course, again, I return to Thoreau, who built the hut with just the necessary accoutrements and nothing too lavish, although I think we didn't live in huts. we always enjoyed, we hired an architect for the house that I built in Washington State. And I've always been fond of architecture and the extent to which your writing or your carpentry can fulfill your expressions and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that strongly that we wanted to have something that was personal, had our own print on it, sometimes wallpaper or whatever,
mm-hmm.
to identify it. But, my wife is artistic as well, and so we worked as a pair often.
Yeah, I would love to talk about your wife, Rhonda. She,
Rhoda.
Rhoda, I'm sorry. That was a typo on my fault. Oh, gosh, so sorry. You hosted many dinner parties in the course of your life in many different places associated with the colleges many times. And one chapter in this book details some of the entries in what you called her entertainment or hospitality diary, which I think at one point I thought I was going to try and do that. And then I think I did one dinner and then things, life just got so busy, I couldn't keep up with the entry. So I was really impressed that she was able to do that. And so when you went back and looked at that to incorporate that into this book, did you remember, or what were some of the ways that helped you to trace back your life? And there must be some favorite things that she makes that you enjoy that you might want to tell us about.
Yes. Guest book kind of thing. It was very important because it now records things that we've forgotten. People, especially, we tended often to have candidates for positions or artists visiting the campus stay at our house, and so we liked it to be personalized. I worked with the faculty at Muskegon College, where I was also the academic dean, to redo a house that the college had right on the grounds there and turn it into a faculty house. And we had lunches there and meetings and all that kind of thing. And upstairs we had guest accommodations for visiting artists and so on. But Rhoda's remembrance of where the event took place, whether it was on the deck in the back or in the sunroom and who it was, like Vonnegut. We had all kinds of people there in our home. Of course, Vonnegut had Paul Malls.
Oh, that was an era.
But we had Roland Bainton, the Reformation scholar from Yale. We had a lot of artists, poets, and who visited us, And so it was nice to have Rhoda remember who they were, what the purpose of the meeting was, what we had to eat. Often it was things like that people wouldn't get anywhere else, like lefse and Norwegian treats and so forth. But she tended to that, and yet she was also teaching. So I have to commend her taking up, you know, both Martha and Mary in terms of, you know, being the hostess. And if it was raining, even though we had planned something else, she had to adjust to that. And, she got fame as a local actress in the community theater, and also as a hostess, because we got a lot of thank you notes from various people, presidents and others, because we did a lot of back and forth between academics and other places. I was on North Central accreditation team and visited, I think, 18 campuses and chaired the report and so forth on most of them. And it was really enjoyable because we got to know a whole network of colleagues and friends. In addition, many places that we wouldn't otherwise have gone.
So,
but yeah, that guest book was quite an insight into how we were relating to other persons in our field or other fields.
Yeah, it was very interesting, and yeah. I appreciated that she was able to keep up with that, and thought those dinner parties and must have been lovely.
Yeah, she was always more of a diarist than I was, although when we took trips or actually lived in London and so on, she would write it all down, and her mother, Helen Howey, who spent her 95 years in Dundas, where Rhoda was born and grew up, wrote a lot for the Northfield News. Maggie had her write a lot. And, of course, Maggie would go to Texas and see the river.
San Antonio.
Yeah. And
that's Maggie Lee, if anyone's listening.
Architect really to turn the back end of the buildings into something that was an attraction. And that's always interesting. Yeah,
and travel has really been a theme. You lived in England for a while, and you have a quote from Mark Twain, which was that he talked about he traveled to learn.
Traveled to learn.
And you've done that. I think that's a pretty good summary of your life, that you're always learning, that you are someone who is passionate about discovering and, you know, intrigued by that whole idea of learning.
It's not just wanderlust. I think it's a matter of discovery and we, in fact, I think it was, we'd been married 2 years, and we had planned to go to Europe for the grand tour, and that's also was behind travels for students. I took students on what I call literary haunts of the British Isles for like interims and so on, and we actually taught in London for a while. But travel, was very, very important. Not just the travel that we made to other lands and so forth, or across the country, but even the relocations that we made. In some respects, we had to forego some other kind of rewards by making those changes. You know, people who live in the same town with their family and so forth, in some respects, I think I kind of admire them and regret that we didn't have our bearings all the time. But we left Barron and we went around the world, really. And while we return to Barron, it's never the same. You can't go home again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's great stories about the travels and just with your family and the things that you did.
Yeah, even with our pets.
Yes, there's lots of great stories. I love the stories about the pets, and because they are members of the family, right? And
exactly. Well, like Sabrina, she was our firstborn, as it were. She was a wedding gift from an aunt in Sioux City. She was quite athletic, Sabrina, Siamese kitten. She would go in car across the country. She would go with us camping, and she was a great jumper from any door jar or a high windowsill or a bookshelf up a ways. She jumped down to some cozy chair or bed. Very athletic. We had her on a leash, and she was like a little, almost, I would think, almost looked like a little monkey. And one time my wife is standing in line at a bank, and she had Sabrina on her shoulder, of course, on the leash. And by some whim, the cat jumped onto the shoulder of the man in front of her, and he peeled her off his nice white crisp shirt, handed her back, and he said, "That's okay, ma'am. I've got four kids at home."
All of them are characters. Yeah. All of the pets that you talk about in the book are characters.
We've even had lots of ferals and stray cats that have made it to our doorstep, and we feed them. In fact, the vet told Abby, our daughter, who has a couple of kittens, I find it interesting and amusing that your mother feeds stray cats evaporated milk.
Oh, that's expensive.
It is. But it's amazing how much we provide in the way of like nuts and seeds for the birds and squirrels and so forth. But it's kind of an extended family, basically.
Yeah.
And the best story I have really is about our dog, Mesa. My son and I were coming back from California. We were in the Four Corners area and near Mesa Verde. And anyway, we had just stopped at a place to get some grub for an evening meal, including hot dogs. Well, we forgot to get the hot dogs. I don't know how that happened, but when it came out to the range, the Ford Ranger, right down below the tailgate on the parking lot was a pack of wieners. So uncanny. Well, so we picked them up. Well, anyway, those were useful because when we were heading out to a campsite, Nat hollers out to me, "Dad," he was looking in the side mirror, "I think I saw a puppy back there." So we turned around and went back. Sure enough, somebody had abandoned the dog. The dog had made a provisional place there in the culvert, and we used the wieners to lure him out. And ultimately, when we were down to about one winter, Nat grabbed the creature. And, of course, it didn't bite him, but it peed all over him. But that was worth it, because then we decided that we would go to a motel, and we'd all have a bath, including the dog, and maybe stop at McDonald's in the morning for McNuggets or whatever we all wanted, and then we'd head back to Ohio. But we decided, because we were very near Mesa Verde where we found the dog, we'd call him Mesa. And we had a wonderful time with him. His eyes told everything. When we came back from the lake, because we spent a lot of time sailing on the lake and so on, sometimes we'd stop at a kind of a cafe and takeout place and get Mesa an ice cream cone. And he would not just slurp it down. He would go lick by lick, and his eyes had a dreamy look to it. And it was a thrill for us just to watch him. And then if we sometimes added a stop for pizza at Domino's, the dog was the most impatient of all of us to get that pizza and go home, because we shared a life and a menu with the dog. But Mesa was great.
We won't give away all the story of Mesa, because there's more about Mesa in this in the book, and it's really touched me. It's a beautiful, beautiful story.
Yeah.
And there's your love of words is clear throughout the book, and your love of learning is clear, and it's just a really fascinating look at your life through your eyes of Beyond Barren, a memoir. And are you continuing to write?
When you or somebody else, others asked me about it, and after the last book on journeys and so forth, I said I didn't know. And then within a year, I had this book ready. I think the next book, if I did one, would be probably a poetry anthology. And I've got a lot of study guides and so forth. And I might have some commentary to share, but I'm not sure.
That's okay. It's exciting. And I'm so appreciative. It took us a while to get a date ready for us to be able to talk.
Yeah.
And I just am so thrilled that we had this opportunity. And I thank you for sharing your stories with us.
Well, thank you. I hope others like you will select the book for their reading. And I have copies available that are that don't require mailing or sales tax or anything else.
Sure, and I got my copy at Content Bookstore, so you can hop on down there and find.
Right. They're very handy, yeah. Well, I've enjoyed this trip, as
excellent.
It were.
Excellent.
And the one we had before then, Paula.
Well, thank you for joining me, Dan Van Tassel of Beyond Barren. Folks, we're getting ready to switch out the studio, and we're going to bring in folks to talk about runway, revival, reduce, reuse, refashion. But I was looking for a song that had something to do with the stuff. Last week we went to the 80s, so this week we'll go to the 90s. This is what I found, and you're in for a treat. This is New Kids on the Block. You got it, the right stuff on Art Zany Radio. Folks, thanks for tuning in and listening to our great New Kids on the Block. That was kind of a trip back and kind of fun. I don't know if someone knows any recommendations of songs about stuff. I'd love to hear it. So we are here now talking about the Runway Revival Fashion Show, which is happening Thursday, August 22nd. At 6 o'clock, and tickets will be on sale for that. But what we want to talk about today is making sure that there are artists who are participating. So I'm joined today with Natalie Draper and also Anika. I completely goofed up your name when I did the introduction.
Okay.
Anika Richner.
Yes.
Okay, excellent. And you're with the Community Action Center. Natalie is with the library, but this time you're doing a role as one of the folks on the committee.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my other hats.
Yes, exactly. So congratulations that there's going to be another year of this. And how would you describe this if for people who maybe missed the last event? What is the Runway Revival Fashion Show?
Well, it is. It was a really great event. And, you know, your first year, you're not sure exactly what to expect. But the point is to celebrate environmental sustainability and the work of Community Action Center and all in our whole community. And we came up with this idea to have a runway show and have models wearing pieces made of recycled, reusable materials to celebrate the environmental piece and also just to have some fun. And we thought this up last year, and we had 18 artists create 20 different pieces worn on the runway by models of all ages. And it was just a really great event. And I think what we heard from people that came was just that it was so fun to watch each individual unique piece that the models wore. And it had like an educational component to it, too.
And it was a sellout, too. So
we sold out before the event, the week of the event.
And so then you loved this event, I know, Natalie.
You know, I couldn't stop talking about it, honestly. I just attended, right? I had no role in the first year other than just enjoying it. But it's like some serious fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really exciting to see. It felt like being at a proper runway show. And it was really, really fun and really exciting to see.
Can you tell us about some of those pieces to give people an idea, like what kinds of things are included?
There was a really cool range. So, I mean, the one thing I thought was great about it were the range of artists themselves, right? So we had young, who was the youngest artist.
I think she was 6 or 7. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Uh-huh. Oh, so, right. That's surprising.
She and her stepmom made a piece together.
Oh.
And then somebody who I think was in their like 80s maybe. Uh-huh. I mean, it was basically, you know, the whole span of human life expectancy showing her garments on the runway, which is really fantastic. But we had, you know, really like inspiring, you know, clothing made out of like linens, like, you know, you would find like an old tablecloth and refashioned it into a jacket. And then mm-hmm. more avant-garde pieces made out of packing material. The Rolling Stone dress was really fantastic. Mm-hmm. My favorite was the one that Cassie did with the coffee filters.
Oh, I guess there are pictures for people.
That had such a nice story behind it, too. And that's the thing, too, is like, what was the inspiration that people brought into the pieces that they made and showed was really neat to hear the story.
And so you can go to the Community Action Center and look up Runway Revival, mm-hmm. and there's a page, and there are some pictures of last mm-hmm. year's event that'll give you some ideas.
We have pictures of every piece from the runway last year and an artist statement that talks about what they're made of and what the inspiration was, and yeah, really fun to go look at.
And so right now you're hoping that there are artists out there who want to participate in the second year, and so you're looking for artist submissions.
We are looking for artists. So.
And what do artists need to know about these creations, about their what skills they need, and what are the, you know, the parameters?
90% recycled material is the main, that's the main kind of requirement, mm-hmm. right? As far as skills, I think if you can work a glue gun and it can get down the runway,
then it qualifies.
Uh-huh. I think you do need to supply a model, too. So make sure that that's going to stay on that model for about, what is it, about maybe 50 feet?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so you don't have to consider yourself a designer or a fashionista or, you know, be trendy. This is like just thinking outside the box. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the environmental message with this event. You want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think this community cares deeply about the environment, and there's so many unique and wonderful things happening by so many different groups. And mm-hmm. so another piece is we want to highlight and celebrate those things at the event as well. So we do have vendors. We call it, what do we call it?
It'll come to us.
Brilliant, I promise. but we'll have vendors from around the community kind of demonstrating the cool things that are happening in other spaces and places. But I think the other thing is you don't have to be, you know, professional designer, artist, like you said. just have kind of the excitement and the passion for it. And also, I really recognize that this is a labor of love. It does take time. And for people who love to do crafty things, it's fun. It's also truly supporting Community Action Center and all of the things that we do by creating an event that is fun and exciting, brings so much support and care and resources back into the community.
Right. It is a fundraiser for mm-hmm. the Community Action Center. So what you're doing is going to, you know, make a difference. And that's an important part of it, too. And I love how it just sort of allows creativity and imagination mm-hmm. to go to places, you know, you might not think. So you can just, like, look at your stuff around your house and think, how could I reuse that? What could I make that? How could that be different? You know, I think that's, mm-hmm. how can I put that together, or, you know, what am I passionate about, and how can I show that through a piece of something that's worn by a model? And so it's a really brilliant idea.
It's out of the name. It's the Zero Waste Showcase.
That's what it is. Whew. And so there is a deadline coming up for anyone interested in contributing a piece. And so they don't have to have the piece completely done, but what do they need to have before, and tell us the new...
They need to have an idea mm-hmm. and a pretty good idea of how it's going to get done by August 19th, which is the week, the dress rehearsal week.
And the pieces need to be finished by the 8th is what I see. And then, but then it's dress rehearsal is the 19th. Mm-hmm. So you time yourself correctly. Right. So you get that done. So, but right now it doesn't have to be a finished piece in order to submit.
Give us, you know, kind of broad strokes, a sketch. There is a form, a Google form on the Runway Revival page where people can submit their ideas, and any questions or anything about that too, like we will follow up with people when they submit their ideas and talk them through their project a little bit and make sure that they're going to be runway ready. So July 1st, today was the deadline. We are extending that to July 1st, so you're going to have plenty of time to get that concept together and get it to us.
Yeah, and can people work in teams? Oh, you certainly. Mentioned that. So it's, mm-hmm. you're not on your own. So if you know somebody who is better at the glue gun than you, but you're good with the providing the materials, make a partnership, come together. Any other of the pieces from last year you want to highlight that will kind of give us some, you know, insight into the range of possibilities? Because it really, just the recycled idea doesn't have to necessarily mean waste. It could mean, like you mentioned, the tablecloth, the, you know, combining different pieces of, you know, something gets stained or damaged, and how would you put that into something new? Because I think that's so important for us to think about. It's something I worry about all the time. Mm-hmm. If I've got things that, you know, are good, and I want to know how do I make the connection to somebody else who can then use it again? That's what this highlights.
Yeah, and I think what was great is we did have that wide range that Natalie mentioned, from things that you actually could wear to other things that were more statement pieces. You mentioned the coffee filter dress, which was also my favorite, made by Cassie Meza, who works at Community Action Center. She would make the coffee for everybody coming in to wait for the food shelf in the morning, and she saved the filters, the used filters.
Well, that story is great.
Amazing. She dried them out. She actually used the leftover grounds to create kind of a coffee paint. And so she made this dress all made out of coffee filters. And then it was kind of an ombre color because she painted on after she had kind of assembled it and painted it with coffee too. So it's actually on display in the Resource Center at CAC. And we're actually hoping to have some of our pieces from last year also displayed at the event, just as something extra to decorate the room. And speaking of decorations, there is a fun event coming up.
Yeah, at the library, July 1st at 5:30. This is on our calendar, and we'll be sending out some more information about it. But you can join us, bring some stuff. Like if you have maybe those mega corporation plastic mailing packages that ubiquitous mm-hmm. landfill matter from Amazon that could be crafted into flowers for decorating the event.
Oh, I love so this.
So that kind of thing. Bring plastic bags. Bring, like, I think packing material lends itself very well to shaping into things. So me, myself, and Erica Zweifel, and one of our interns, Annika Nguyen, are going to be there to help folks shape the packing material and other things that they bring in. Make sure it's clean.
That's something I mentioned at the beginning of the show, like the stuff that multiplies in your house. And that's one of the things that, you know, I get so frustrated, like, okay, this box came and now I've got more stuff, double the stuff. Yep. So we can bring it in on July 1st.
Yep. Bring it in July 1st. And, we're going to fashion it all into, the decorations that you will see then at the event.
Fabulous.
So it's a way for people to come in, learn how to make something, and it's just going to be sort of creative, fun community. We'll have some snacks and stuff. So just come and join us.
What time is that?
That's at 5:30 on July 1st. It's a Monday.
That sounds like a great way to kick off excitement for the event and to get people who maybe don't do the fashion part but can be a part of the show as well. And when do tickets go on sale? For the event, it is the actual event, Runway Revival Fashion Show, Thursday, August 22nd from 6 to 9. That's at the Carleton College White Center for Creativity. And tickets will be on sale soon?
Tickets will be on sale the end of July.
Okay. Yes. So mark your calendars to make sure that you get those. CommunityActionCenter.org, Runway Revival, you can follow along. What else have we missed? The main thing we want to do is encourage people to participate. You know, use those imaginations. Submit right now just your idea. I love that. You don't have to have a finished thing. You're just like, here's my concept, and I want to be a part of showcasing what, you know, we're doing for the environment and supporting the Community Action Center.
Yes. Thank you so much. Yeah, looking for those artists. And also, we are taking sponsorships. And so if that's something that interests you, you want to support in that way, we'd love to have you. CAC only has two events during the year. One is this Runway Revival, and the other is Operation Joy, which is our holiday program for kids. And so we're actually combining forces and making one ask to the community to kind of make it easier for people to get involved. You can support both of them at once, or you can just choose one or the other. But more information about sponsorship opportunities is also on our website, communityactioncenter.org.
That's fabulous. Thank you so much for coming in today to Art Zany Radio. I'm so excited that you were here, Natalie Draper and Anika Reichner. Did I do that right?
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. And folks, support Runway Revival Fashion Show. I'll be asking you if I see you what you might be creating. This is Art Zany Radio, reminding you to always remember to add some Art Zany to your life. In the meantime, till next time, enjoy your imagination.
You've been listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault.
Connect and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org. Or call 507-645-8877.
Your town, your life, your radio station. KYMN, Northfield.